Hello and welcome to History Gap. I'm Molly Goodfellow.
And I'm Georgia McAndrew. This is the podcast that bridges the history gender gap by spotlighting women from history in every episode. And just so you know, we are not historians, just two girls who like to chat about women in history.
So true. This week on the podcast, we are talking about Joan of Arc, the myth, the legend, the martyr. What do you know about Joan of Arc?
Not much, other than when I think of her, I just think of a woman in armour, a funky haircut.
Yeah. I like unwittingly had my hair cut recently and realised I've given myself the Joan of Arc.
You've given yourself the Joan of Arc. And can I say stunning?
Thanks. I keep telling myself it's French.
It is French.
And that's the story I'm going with.
It's chic. I'm loving it. And I feel like stunning. Anyway, should we talk about Joan of Arc?
Let's talk about Joan of Arc.
Joan was born in 1412 in Domrémy in France. She was born into a small village and to a peasant family. She was a hard worker, by all accounts, but very forthright and pious. A very religious child, some would say. In 1425, when she was around 13 years old, she started to hear voices. And these happened to be the voices of several saints. Specifically, Saint Michael, Saint Catherine, and Saint Margaret. It's reported that these voices were telling her to help the Dauphin, Charles VII, in the Hundred Years' War against England and Burgundy. A Dauphin is the title that is given to the eldest son of a king of France, who would be the heir apparent to the French crown. It was around from around 1350 to 1830. She also wanted to help see him crowned as king at Reims, which was where the crowning of kings occurred. Charles's dad, who would have been king, had been dead for years, but because Reims was English territory, Charles's son could not yet be made king, hence Joan's voices. It's also reported in history that Joan's voices had told her to wear men's clothing and also to cut her hair short into what we now call a bob, or what now Molly has.
That's the voices were telling me to. It's a girly thing.
It's a girly thing. When the voices say, cut that hair off. When Joan initially made these claims, she was sort of laughed off, which you can imagine happening if you're a teenage girl who comes forward and says that you're hearing voices of saints at nighttime. But Joan wasn't going to let the haters hold her back. And in 1428, she travelled to see the Dauphin Charles, telling him about the voices and that she'd been sent to help him save France from the English, who were partaking in the Hundred Year War, which was actually 116 years in the end.
That's like, not to interrupt, but that's a long time to have a war. I feel like that spans it spans generations to the point where surely people were like, why are we even fighting now?
It is also really long for like a time period where like people lived until they were like in their mid-20s.
Yeah, so like even more generations to be like, why are we doing
this? Why? I know, I agree. So Charles was actually surprisingly convinced by Joan and actually ended up sending her to the Siege of Orleans in 1429 with the hopes that she would boost the morale of the soldiers and I guess turn the tide of the war.
So this guy who like was basically in waiting to be king, he believed this teenage girl.
Peasant girl.
I've been told that I need to help you out.
Mm.
I mean, like, I guess he's got nothing to lose by doing it. I just don't think it would happen now.
I can't believe it happened then, though, honestly.
No, I feel like if it happened now, you'd end up on, like, Good Morning Britain.
So true, yeah.
And they'd be like, we hear that you're going to tell the king you can help him out.
Yeah. And also, I think, like, the fact that someone of a lower class who was also a woman could like be this forward towards a king. She's also only 17 years old. I mean, it must have been the god element that hooked him in.
Yeah. And the idea also, like, presumably the soldiers also bought into it. Otherwise the whole thing wouldn't work. So like the idea that the soldiers would get lectured by the 17-year-old and were like,
yeah,
thanks, king.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up because it seems that Joan was very stern. For a 17-year-old, especially towards the soldiers. So for a pious and illiterate maid, it's reported that Joan had quite the temper and took her role working for Charles very seriously. It's rumoured she didn't bat an eye to accosting knights for swearing, missing mass or making light of her battle plans. And she was also very much against prostitution and is said to have driven away mistresses and prostitutes from army camps at sword point.
Do you know what? She's lost me here. I think if you're not in the army and you haven't been there since day one and you're 17 years old, don't come in and tell me not to swear.
Yeah.
If I'm fighting for my country, do not tell me I cannot swear. Do not tell me off for missing mass. Do not tell me I cannot have my prostitutes. I just said, who do you think you are? She's she's lost me now.
She's lost me. But also, where does she get this like boldness from? Because like obviously she's gone to the king.
Yeah.
She's declared all of these things. And then now she's telling all these
I would not have the nerve. I just want the wall to fancy me.
You're like, I'm here
kicking, like kicking my heels and giggling. The king sent me to help out. What can I get you guys?
Yeah, what can I do for you guys?
I'm going to get some drinks tied for you guys.
Jokes aside, though, I think Joan is definitely a better feminist than us. She's going into army camps. She's a peasant. She's like, hey, knights, soldiers, listen up. I'm in charge. We respect the boldness.
We respect it.
Nevertheless, what Joan was doing, stern or not, seemed to be working. She really got the troops in shape. So about 9 days after Joan arriving, the English were actually defeated. There was then another conflict at the Battle of
Patay.
Thank you for that. And Joan again brought the French to victory. The soldiers were then able to storm Reims unopposed, and they were able to crown Charles VII as the King of France. Charles would go on to name Joan and her family in French nobility as a thank you for her support.
And that's where we end the story, happily ever after for Joan.
Oh, I wish. A lot of bad shit is coming down the line for Joan. Now, whilst Joan was key in the battle plans, and I suppose the overseeing of the men, it might surprise you that Joan never actually took part in physical combat, despite being memorialised across history as a fearsome fighter in armour, waving a sword on a horse.
She's lost me twice. Second time she's lost me.
You're just not feeling Joan today.
She's coming across as precocious. She's telling them not to sweat. She's not even fighting. So she's turned up to have a tantrum.
There are a lot of things about Joan's story which I just find really baffling. And I've already said it, I'm going to say it again. The king believing her, weird. Her having like this like brashness. I mean, I respect it. It's amazing. Go girl. But like, her turning up and all the men just being like, yeah, all right, I'll let the 17-year-old...
I'll stop swearing.
Yeah, I'll stop swearing.
No worries.
I'll let the 17-year-old just, like, shimmy off all our prostitutes, which we, you know, probably had everywhere we went. But then what's also more baffling is that, like, she helps them actually win things. And I'm like, if you are a peasant, a 17-year-old girl, where are you getting the knowledge?
Yeah.
And from that, I conclude that maybe she actually was hearing saints. And maybe she was supernatural.
Like, maybe.
Do you believe in the supernatural, though? Do you think she could have actually been
hearing
God
was
and saints?
Look, I mean, who can say? I don't think so.
Mm. So we kind of touched upon it, that the voices, as well as telling her about all these plans for Charles and everything, they told her to dress in men's clothing. This was frowned upon. It was like not a good thing. It was illegal to do, specifically for the English, which will be relevant later in the story. This part, I think she's been smart. Like, I think this is like a safety thing.
I think she probably just wanted to and was like, yeah, God said.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you could use that for anything. For,
I know.
God said I'm allowed. God said I can't actually fight, but he said I can stand at the edge and tell you what to do.
Oh my God, you just know that's
I
how
I like
down
such
as
a
well.
Joan hater.
You do, but that's fine.
What's
we're
she
allowed
gonna,
opinions.
What's she going to do, beat me up?
To go back to the no fighting thing, and I know that's been really hard for you to digest, sorry to bring it back up. But why is she memorialized as like a person? I mean, every image I've ever seen of her is like her in full armor on a horse.
Yeah.
Massive sword.
Project managing. Because she wasn't fighting, was she? She was the team leader in The Apprentice of War.
Oh my God, so good. After Charles was crowned as king, Joan was kept in his confidences. She would, however, be put back to work, and she was sent to a siege in Paris in September 1429, which would unfortunately be unsuccessful for Joan and the French. So it seems like her luck or...
Chickens are coming home to roost.
Or her knowledgeable...
Well.
Or her knowledgeable voices weren't providing the goods. Who knows? Then the next month, in November, Joan and the French would also be unsuccessful again in the siege of La Chérie. Like with her initial successes, these failures would see everyone's faith in Joan diminish.
I feel like one unsuccessful battle was bad, but two, it's kind of swings and roundabouts of like, oh, if you win two, that's really great. But if you lose two, that's really bad.
Yeah.
That sounds obvious.
But yeah. But like, if she lost one, they'd be like, oh, unlucky.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine. We'll win the next one. But it's like two in a row, they're starting to get sus.
Yeah.
Though it is important to say that Joan did suffer some wounds in her time with the French army, including an arrow to the shoulder during her campaign in Orleans and a crossbow to the thigh at Paris. So she did have some battle wounds in Joan's defence.
Okay, fine.
So obviously she had had these failures and she was probably looking for a success. So her next move in 1430 was to bring together volunteers to relieve Compiègne, which was under siege by English allies from Burgundy. In the same year, she was captured by the Allies, and after months of trying to escape their capture, once by even allegedly jumping from a tower, she didn't escape and she was handed over to the English in November of the same year. How the mighty have fallen.
I know. So sad.
I mean, obviously, we'll never know about these voices, if they were an actual sign from God, if they were all in her brain. But surely she herself is feeling a little let down.
It's not very like through thick and thin, is it? It's very when she's boosting morale and getting the king on the throne, they love her. But when they can't quite win the battles, it's Joan's fault, which I don't, although I have my grievances against her personally, I don't think is entirely fair.
I do also think, if maybe she had continued to succeed, people wouldn't have probably ever turned against her.
Yeah.
It's just like she's had three failures now, I suppose. And then she's been captured. They've just all kind of turned their back on her really quickly.
I think it's she's like an easy target to blame. Like, don't look at why you lost the war personally, but be like, oh, she could have told us how to do it better.
Yeah. Well, she wasn't an easy target, I guess, in a way, because obviously she has sold this to everyone that she is like a messenger from God, right?
Yeah.
And in a way, they're kind of turning their back on like this messenger from God, because unless they were just like, you've used this God excuse too many times.
Yeah, that's true.
And a question that comes up in every History Gap episode, where were her parents in all of this?
Where were her parents?
Where were her parents?
Where was her boyfriend? Where was her husband?
Why is no one?
Why is she out unsupervised? Where is her chaperone? Where's the king in this? Like, I feel like he's put her in this position. He should back her up. Although, I guess now that he's made king, he kind of feels like she's done her part for him.
That's true. But I do find it interesting that she was captured by the English. So it was obviously like a reputational thing that she was kind of a big deal.
Do you think that's why I've taken such a dislike to her?
I don't know. I don't know why.
It's like my ancestors.
I don't know why you've taken such a bad dislike to her.
It's not a dislike, I just think she's lazy.
Okay, fair enough. What do you think? Write us in a history app.
Joan of Arc lazy? ?
So once captured by the English, she was put on trial by Bishop Pierre Couchon. She was originally accused of up to 70 charges, which was then whittled down to an easy 12.
She had a good lawyer.
I did think that. I was like, who's someone saying in the world here?
Medieval Saul Goodman.
Some of her charges included heresy, by saying she heard voices of the saints, also blasphemy, wearing men's clothes, and she was also told that her visions were demonic. For the above crimes, Joan was actually offered a deal, though I will say not a very good one. So she was offered life imprisonment for an admission of guilt. Not a great option. And it is believed that Joan signed the deal with a cross, but she was illiterate, so we can't be sure she even knew what she was signing. And always read the small print.
I sign stuff all the time without checking.
No, you can't do that, Molly.
I'm just DocuSign, click, you paste, paste, paste.
It's like every episode of Real Housewives ever, their husbands make them sign stuff, and then it's like lawsuit, 20 million quid, 10 years down the line.
We can't go back and tell Joan that now.
However, a few days later, Joan was reported to have once again donned boys' clothing, and she reversed her guilty admission, which she said she'd only given out of the fear of death, causing them to reverse the offer and sentence her to death. So she was burned in the stake on the 30th of May, 1431, when she was around 19 years old. And they didn't just burn her once, nor twice, but actually three times, just to make sure that she was really, really dead. And interestingly, archaeologists find the remains of a black cat amongst her ashes, which was often a ritual used at the time in burning of witches. The killing of black cats was believed to have the power to break spells. Plus, across history, they were kind of assumed to be linked to the devil. Again, with the whole witchcraft thing kicking off, it's a very brazen way to like conduct yourself, that you're hearing voices and like you go to
royalty. You want to keep that to yourself.
Yeah. which is again why I think it must be true. In 1456, there was actually an investigation into Joan's trial and the verdict was overturned. So Joan became revered as a martyr and an asset to the Roman Catholic Church, and her story also heralded her a feminist and a national symbol of France. Now, as well as having an enduring legacy into the present, she also had a reputation at the time, and I think this is really fun, actually. She actually had several impersonators who pretended to be her after her death.
Chic.
Including her own two brothers, who teamed up with a woman and pretended that they had escaped
the
English. Well, because I imagine news didn't travel very quickly.
Oh,
then.
So they thought she was still alive.
So they just pretended that Joan like had escaped from the English and hadn't died. And they were welcomed like across cities as heroes and given plenty of gifts before obviously being eventually found out, because Joan was very,
That's
very
fun.
Dead after being burnt three
I'd
times.
I'd watch a sitcom that is that.
Well, I've always said you haven't made it, so you have a tribute act.
Yeah.
How do you feel about her being like exonerated / appreciated in the modern day?
I think it's good that she's exonerated. I think obviously we shouldn't have been burning people at the stake.
No, yeah. Or
and I'll go on the record to say that I don't approve of that as a practice. A bit little too late. Like, I think she was eventually canonized by the Roman Catholic Church and she was made into a saint.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool, very chic.
Very chic. I just think there is so much that we don't know.
There's too many. She lived too short a life.
I mean, obviously, it is a tragedy that she dies
yeah.
age 19. That's obviously horrendous. And she was very courageous in the sense yeah. that she was storming into royal courts.
She was very brave. If I was hearing voices, I'm keeping that to myself.
Yeah, demanding to be heard about all these voices and messages of God at a time of witchcraft. She's also wearing boys' clothing, which I think, as we kind of said, it was definitely like, I'm going to try and keep myself yeah. safe. And she takes control of armies.
She won two battles. And
she won
two battles that led to the king being able to be crowned, which is what she kind of set out to do. So she reached her goals, which is something that I have never done.
Yeah.
So you've got to give her that.
So to Joan for that, for reaching your goals, hats off to you.
Slay. You've been listening to History Gap with me, Molly Goodfellow.
And me, George McAndrew. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and subscribe and review if you can.
And keep an eye on our socials at History Gap on Instagram and TikTok and at HistoryGap_pod on Twitter.
This has been wild, this whole episode.
I've enjoyed it.
I've enjoyed it.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. C'est la vie.